To where you are born and reborn. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this episode, which is a different sort of episode, is Rabbi Shifra Tobachman. And what's different about it today is we're going to talk about preparation for the High Holy Days in Judaism that are coming up the end of this month, end of September, beginning of October. And one of the things that I want to ask Rabbi Shifra about is, having grown up in a non-religious home, in a secular home, how is it that you came to appreciate, how did you learn personally to internalize the process of the High Holy Days? What does it mean to you? Because I believe you are in a position that many Jewish people in this country are in. They're wanting to find meaning, find connection, find wholeness. And this holiday is one example of the many ways in Judaism, and probably almost the central example of how you do that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you for that question. So actually, I came to Judaism through progressive Jewish activists. In my mid-20s, I would say. I was busy doing activism in all kinds of ways, mostly a lot of reproductive rights work, a lot of other social justice work. And I was around a lot of progressive activists of various types. involved in various movements and activities. And someone said to me, so I met these, my roommate, my housemate at the time said, I met these people, I think you should meet them. And it turned out that they were Jewish feminists and other progressive Jews who were attempting to make meaning of Judaism based on their values and what was important to them in the world. And there was a lot of that happening around the country, and I knew nothing about it at the time, but I got introduced to it, and it became my path, actually. So progressive, creative, feminist Judaism became sort of my path. Like, I had not known what my spiritual path was, and turned out that was it.
Right.
So everything else had been really interesting to me, and you know, like everything had been interesting. Like, every time I was exposed to anything spiritual, it was always really interesting, and always felt like something I could just kind of, it was like a sponge, you know, just kind of,
mm-hmm. Ooh, and you could work it.
This meditation is really great, you know, or this, and I loved earth-based and feminist and imagery for spiritual life as well. I really resonated with that. And that was probably the closest I came to having a pathway. And I think that is still part of absolutely part of my path, my Jewish path.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But anyway, so creative progressive Judaism became my way. So there was that. And then that, of course, took me to High Holidays in a way that had some resonance for me. So I was going to High Holiday services with in lesbian community, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bisexual person who's lived largely a lesbian life. Just to clarify for people, I like to be upfront about that for people.
Yep.
So that was an important first step. And so it immediately had meaning there, because it was with these people who had meaning who made meaning in the world in ways that I resonated with.
Right.
And then I ended up, you know, learning more and getting involved in other Jewish, small Jewish communities, where people had much more rootedness in the traditions, and I started to find meaning. But, oh, wait, I want to be able to get to this piece about preparation for the high holidays.
Right. I'll help remember that for you. Can I interject an idea here?
Yeah, yeah.
How did your life change, your internal perception of who you were and how you show up with others when you began to accept the Jewish spirituality that you found grounding in a lesbian community and doing the services and the activities in that way? What opened up in you that you didn't have access to before?
You know what? What I didn't yet say is that I fell very much in love with someone who actually was a man who was also in that same milieu and who was deeply grounded in Jewish practice and who taught me about the beauty of Shabbat. And I would say that for me, almost everything evolved from there, combined with learning about the Shekhinah, which is a feminine aspect of the divine in Judaism that none of us heard about when we were growing up, and that is also the manifestation of the divine in the world around us, the indwelling presence of God and God in the world around us, physical world around us. And those two things, Shabbat and Shekhinah, were what started giving everything meaning to me. It all evolved from there for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I wrote some blessings and poems, and then that helped, and I don't know, other things like along those lines. And It was only many years later that I learned about this practice of Elul, which is the month that precedes the high holidays. And again, you know, a lot of what Judaism is about is creating sacred time by noticing distinctions. And I happen to love the Jewish calendar, and we could maybe do a whole conversation just on
and
that.
And we may over time do, yeah.
So one of the things that happens in Judaism is that there's seven weeks prior to high holidays called the 7 weeks of comfort. And which starts with a holiday that's about collective mourning, Tisha B'Av. And ends with Rosh Hashanah, which is the new year, which is a time to notice the birth and rebirth and renewal of the world. And so there's those 7 weeks, and then after those first 3 weeks is Elul, is this month of Elul. Mm-hmm. Now the word Elul is also an acronym in Hebrew, Anila Dodi Vedodi Li. And what that means is, I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. So for the sake of love, we start diving into this work of what's called teshuvah, or return. And return, what is it return to? Well, it's a return to our more aligned best selves. It's a return to our it's about forgiveness. Teshuvah is about the practice of really diving in. Where did I mess up? Where did I miss the mark this year? Where did I, you know, where's a relationship kind of torn, or where was I not good to myself that I want to pay some gentle, loving, tender attention to? Where is what's something that is from the past, maybe a long time ago, but that's been on my mind lately that needs some attention so that I can move forward in a more clearer way in my life, so that I can be more mindful of what's needed in the world or in my community or in my relationships. And so people often you know, Yom Kippur, which happens 10 days after Rosh Hashanah, is the end of this cycle, and Yom Kippur is a fast day, and it's a day of atonement. It's translated usually as a day of atonement, and often when people aren't engaged in a regular on a regular basis or haven't had exposure to Judaism, they think, really? So you do all that once a year on Yom Kippur? And the answer is no. Actually, you do that all year. You can do that all year long. It's always good. What the High Holidays do is that they, first of all, they bring us together for this process, the one thing. So we're doing our work individually, but we're also doing it collectively. And it's a way of saying, well, if we haven't been paying attention up to now, here, do it now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That sort of shakes you up. It's intended to kind of shake you up. We blow the shofar. We blow the shofar. And it's intended to wake us up. So the month of Elul is intended to help us get ready for that. Because if you just walk in and you haven't been thinking about it beforehand, then how do you know what to pay attention to that day? You know, how do you know? You know, well, you can figure it out. You can, it's not like you can't make meaning or have a meaning for Yom Kippur without doing the other things. You absolutely can. But you're going to have a much fuller experience. And the process is going to have more more integrity with the rest of your life.
Right. If you spend 4 weeks exploring your longing,
exactly.
When you try to find fulfillment in your longing, it will be richer.
Exactly. 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 I pulled out this book prior to our talking. Which is by Rabbi Alan Liu, of blessed memory, died several years ago, who was this wonderful rabbi and also he was a rabbi and meditation teacher. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this book called "This Is Real." This is real, and you are completely unprepared. And I'm showing it to you, Eric. Your listeners can't see this, but you know the way the book cover is written, it just says that across
right. The entire book cover.
back and front. That's all it says on the book cover. This is real, and you are completely unprepared. And he says, and it's about preparing for the High Holidays. That's what it is. It's a book about preparing for the High Holidays. And he says, you're walking through the world half asleep. It isn't just that you don't know who you are and that you don't know how or why you got here. It's worse than that. These questions never arise. It's as if you're in a dream. Then the walls of the great house that surrounds you crumble and fall. You tumble out into a strange street, suddenly conscious of your estrangement and your homelessness. A great horn sounds, calling you to remembrance, but all you can remember is how much you have forgotten. Every day for a month, you sit and try to remember who you are and where you're going. By the last day of this month, your need to know these things weighs upon you. Your prayers become urgent. So the idea is to allow this to be a process that can take you into something, and it might be something uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it right, it probably will be uncomfortable.
Right, and the whole word urgent, it becomes your urge and not something that is pulled out of you from outside. It's your urgency.
Oh my gosh, I've never thought of that. I've never thought of that etymology before. Thank you. I love that. So between urge and urgency.
Yeah.
The urge is such a...
I'm an urgent person. It's just written into me. So I couldn't not notice that one.
Yeah, but it's great because I think we have so much unneeded urgency. I mean, there's so many things in our world that need attention, and they need attention now. And yet that feeling of, oh my God, urgency, 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 like living there all the time, however much, I mean, most
urgency is not anxiety.
Oh, that's interesting. You're like, yeah.
Anxiety has a fretting quality. Urgency, this is really important and you're not prepared.
Yeah, so let's go with that for now. I often try to teach to this idea that living in urgency isn't helpful, isn't good, because because we end up in, just peaking our adrenaline too much. And but actually, I like what you're saying. Thank you.
The deeper urges are from streams and waters that have no limits.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. So you're replenished. If you're following an urge that wells from that deep, then you're being replenished from the well.
That's beautiful. My sense of it. That's just.
I love that. I love that. Given me something wonderful to play with there. Thank you. So, so during the month of Elul, one of the things, there's several practices that go with the month of Elul. One is to hear the shofar sounded. Some people can do that. Some people don't have a shofar to hear. That's fine. But you can imagine that sounding of the shofar. Again, it's about waking us up to something. Some words from Psalms that we say, it's one of the songs that I sent, actually, that I don't really think I don't remember what I sent now.
You sent me Akat Shalti, Kava Miral, and you sent Genesis.
Do the Kava Miral one.
Okay, here we go.
Sha'alti Beit Adonai Achad Sha'alti Otavakesh Achad Sha'alti Sha'alti
what would you like to say about the Chava mural piece?
Well, for one thing, I'd like to say that the video that goes with it, she's sitting by the water. She's sitting by lapping water. Yeah, exactly. Eric is making a wave, a motion of waves, rolling waves. And she is seeing this beautiful version that she wrote of this song. It's not the one that I really know. It's one that I thought was perfect for what we were doing today. Mm-hmm. And I really loved. What these words say, Achat She'alti Met Hashem Ota Avakesh, there's one thing I ask. There's only one thing I ask of you, God, divine source of life. Only one thing, and that's to dwell with you all the days of my life, and to awaken, and to awaken in your holy place, which I take as every place with our attention.
Right.
Right. Because what makes something holy? It's our attention to it. It's, you know, it's the way we attend to it. We create the holy mm-hmm. space. Out of a world that we could take as being filled with sacredness, right? But if these words like sacred and kadesh, they often come from words that are about separating something out, right? You're separating something out for a purpose. And in this case, the purpose for a holy purpose, and in this case, we're asking to have our attention be aware of that holiness that's in everything. So when I look at something and I'm attending to it, I'm looking at you right now, Eric. Okay. You know, if I attend to this relationship in a conscious way, then it becomes something holy.
Mm.
If I attend to my garden that I inherited from the previous owners of my house, thank you, thank you, thank you. Then that can become something sacred, something holy. And when I go away and the tomatoes rot, then I'm paying attention to it.
But that is also sacred in another way.
And my bringing mindful attention to that is an important part of the process, right?
Right, right. And in the intensely polarized time, polarity or polarization can be seen as a form of separateness, which could also be sacred.
Right.
But we have a really hard time accepting that possibility.
That's right.
Separateness is not a lack of connection.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And that's something we don't understand very well.
I've heard I heard once that people often try and distinguish compassion and empathy from one another.
Mm-hmm.
People do that in different ways. And one way that I heard that I happened to like was the idea that empathy is being in someone's pathos, in someone's mm-hmm. suffering. And compassion is being with someone's someone else's experience, let's say.
Right, with their pathos, or as one of my seminary professors says, we believe in a pathetic God, and that's because pathos means we have emotion.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, yes. I love that.
Yes.
And of course, that's true. I was just listening to something yesterday about empathetic joy, you know,
Wow.
That the joy is also something that we can, you know, we can
enter into.
We can enter into.
Yeah.
We can be with some, we can be with someone else's joy, even when their joy might seem counter to our obvious interests.
So or our values or our ethics.
Right. But they're so joyful. We go, wow, look at that. Right. And it lifts us up.
That means you have a really clear sense of trust. To be able to say that, you stand on ground where you trust that reality is bigger than yourself and you don't need to manage it.
Or I want to not
manage it.
Manage it.
Right. Yeah. Right. No. I mean, that goes.
I'm successful.
Yeah. Yeah. We do things we aren't aware of. That. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yes, absolutely. And so the so to bring this back to Elul.
Okay, you were about to say something else.
I'm sure I was. I'm sure it was very important, Derek.
Yes. I'm sure it would have been fun, and it will still be fun, whatever it is.
That's my response when I forget what I was going to say. I'm sure it was very important. That's why I forgot.
Or if it's important, it'll come around again.
Exactly. It will return. So.
You wanted to talk about Elul and preparation.
So this is a good time any time is, but this is a good time to, call someone that you've wanted to talk to for a long time who maybe there was something uncomfortable that happened, but maybe you don't want that in the way anymore, or you aren't really sure what it was that made it so that you stopped talking to that person, or something's been bugging you a long time and it feels like, okay, I've got to have a chance to find out what happened there or to say this thing. Can be a time for that. It can be a time, though, even at least as much, if not more, to say, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I hurt you. I'm sorry that we became disconnected. I didn't want that. Or I thought I wanted it, but it turned out I didn't. It can be a time to say to people who are in your life who you are, you know, have a perfectly decent relationship with, but being human means that we know it's likely that we've done things that didn't sit right or weren't attentive in the best possible way to them or their needs. So it can be a time to say, please forgive me for any ways that I've harmed you this year. Please forgive me. I'm sorry for any ways that I've harmed you this year. I'm sorry for any way. You don't have to forgive me, actually. I take that part back of what I just said in this interview. The important thing is to say, I'm sorry for any ways that I've harmed you this year. Any ways that I've interrupted you or not listened to you well or hurt you unintentionally or insulted you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I care about you. I'm sorry. That's one of the most important things we can do at this time. I think it's a really good time myself to, for me, it's an important time to be thinking about how can I live into what's important for me more in the world so that the world can be better
mm-hmm.
and I can be better at the same time. So, you know,
what was so impressive to me about the way you set up the I'm sorry for any way I may have hurt you unintentionally, inadvertently. Those are the things we don't often talk about or attend to, and yet they're so very critical. And there are times when we intentionally hurt or intentionally squeeze people because of what we perceive we need that we're not getting. And that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
And that's part of what this holiday is about, but not as central as the full restart that you're talking about for those things that we have not yet risen to consciousness.
I think that it's interesting because, you know, both are important, but we can't do everything.
Yeah.
And I wish I could repair all the relationships and all the possible damage, you know, that I've done knowingly or unknowingly over the years. I so wish that I could do that.
Right.
And it causes a great deal of sadness and grief to know that I can't.
Right.
But I can do what I can do. And I can notice, you know, where, again, it's that sense of urge. I love that urge, that version of urgency that you gave to me in this conversation. Thank you. That it's about what, you know, what's welling up,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's welling up and needing to come forward at this time, so that I can move closer to that idea of Ani Lido Divido Dili, I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine, so that I can be a beloved and take in the belovedness of others, and of beloved community and of my beloved world.
Right.
And of other. I just want to say, one of the things that has been challenging for me is that I love connecting with communities that are not inherently my community. So that's not always easy to do when you're in a new place.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm a rabbi, so I have to pay attention to the community that I'm, you know, that I'm mostly here to help.
Right.
To nurture. But you know, that's another example of how we can, something that can happen during Elul. So, you know, that can happen anytime. So.
Right. Right. But we have to notice it and do it.
Right.
I'm wondering, do you have music that goes with this concept of I am my beloved and my beloved is mine, I am, or this notion of becoming more at one with each other?
Yeah. Dodi vedodi li haro elba shoshani achati onati tamati achati achati onati tamati Bye.
What would help people who are contemplating connecting with their Judaism or who are not Jewish to understand how to anticipate the cycle or the process that is begins with Rosh Hashanah and ends with Yom Kippur?
Oh, yeah.
But especially as either somebody who identifies as culturally Jewish but not religiously so.
Yeah. Oh, how great. Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, people in general, you know, we human people I'd say think about what is it in your life that needs some renewing? And that's Rosh Hashanah. You know, that's what, you know, you can kind of notice, ooh, renewal, that's nice. What do I want to notice and be grateful for? As a year begins, as a cycle begins. And you know, one of the things that can help us figure that out is also noticing what isn't quite right, you know, like where did I mess up this year, you know, or recently, or, you know, these things still apply, whether you think of them in terms of spiritual terms or in terms of your relationship with God. Oh yeah, that's an awfully important aspect for people who are religiously oriented.
If you don't like the God language in your relationship with reality, what's wrong with
reality, your relationship with the world, your relationship to social justice, your relationship to the environment, your relationship to climate change, your relationship to use of energy,
or the other side.
All those things. Yeah. All those things. Yeah. Think about the things that you care about and how you might want to engage with those things or those people or those beings, you know, animals, whatever it might be, better. You know, it's an opportunity. It's just, it's a chance to, it's a chance to do that.
Right.
Why not take it? You know?
Right, right, right. And it's a reset.
And, you know, Yom Kippur, and that's the whole period, the whole days of awe, it's called, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That's, you know, that whole time, you know, you can, if you want to just, you want to take that chunk of time, that 10 days, and just say, okay, I'm just going to pay extra, a little extra attention to this during these 10 days.
Right, right.
It can be one thing. It can be one relationship. It can be one one issue.
Right. And the language, because awe and wonder are two words that are almost identical. And a phrase that comes to my mind when you say this is, I wonder what will become of this.
Ah.
I wonder what will become of me.
Ah.
I wonder what will be.
Nice. Yeah, thank you. Enter it with curiosity.
Yes, that's exactly. Yes, but that is the day of awe.
Enter it with curiosity.
And when you enter with, I'm pulling in because I grew up in an environment where there were the average age of people there was 65, and the old men would sit out on benches in town and they would watch the kids walk by, and these were old men who in that time were born between 1875 and 1900, and when they looked at you, they looked at you with wonder. With wide eyes. It wasn't just cataracts. It was they would behold you. Like you're talking about beholding the day at the beginning of these segments. You know, they would behold you, so they see not just you, but everything around you. And in some cases, they would know three and four generations of your ancestors because they had known them personally. And so when you talk about days of awe, for me, the way I experience it is that I'm seeing the world in its context in a way I've never seen it before, because I see not just pieces, but I see context.
Yeah. Right.
And that is what I hear when you describe it.
Yeah. I love that. I love that image of the old men sitting and watching the children go by and beholding them with wonder. Both because of that moment that they're in and because, oh, look, that little girl. Doesn't she look like Margaret?
Yes.
From when we were in elementary.
Three generations ago.
Right? And so, yes, when we do this repair, when we do this returning to Teshuva, repair, to return to Teshuva, returning, and this repair, it's as if we're repairing. It's as if we're repairing for all those generations.
Right. And in English, the word repair historically meant to return when you repair to the dining room.
Oh, yes.
I had never made that connection before.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
Yes.
Right. Oh, repair.
Yes. Yeah. No, repair. It makes sense.
Oh, my gosh. Right. Oh, that's great. We're repairing something that's broken.
Right.
That's been, you know, torn in some way. And at the same time, you know, it's like you have to look there, because, you know, like Leonard Cohen's "Ring the Bell That Still Can Ring." There's still a perfect.
Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything.
Forget your perfect offering. Yeah. There is a crack in everything. It's how the light gets in. So the crack is important. It's how the light gets in. And when we pay attention to it, then it's not that we necessarily close up the crack. We might not. It'll never be the same once
right.
But we've paid attention to the light. And again, it's that idea of our attention. It's our attention and our intention that creates this sense of reconnection.
Right, right.
Repair.
And the repair isn't that we return it to some standard that maybe never really was before, but that we become something new. It will never be the same again. I love that your line, that line struck me in a new way. We get so tied up with sentimentality and nostalgia, and that's not what it's about.
That's right.
Especially not in times of profound moral difference and climate change and all sorts of and political issues that we do not know how to navigate through.
Something that we haven't really talked about today, but that is certainly on my mind all the time and other people's, right, is the world that we're presented with right now in this moment is not something we, any of us, really know how to navigate.
Right.
And there is so much that we can't know. We know a lot of things, and we can try and do a lot of things, but we don't know really. And we just try. We run and jump and leap and fall.
Yes.
And we get up. And not with a sense that the, you know, sometimes we might get hurt when we fall, but let's go with the idea instead. Let's go with the metaphor of more like with along this idea of curiosity about the world, this idea of we know that this is, that things are a mess, and also there's wonder and curiosity at the same time. And when a toddler is learning to walk, they don't have much muscle control. So what they're kind of doing when they walk, and it looks like they're running, and it's because, you know, gravity is kind of, it's
throwing them forward.
Throwing them forward, you know, gravity is kind of throwing them forward, and then they fall, and they're, you know, and then they just get up.
Right.
And it's all, it's kind of part of that learning process of connecting with the world.
Right. And sometimes a failure is not anything anyone harmed me with, but it's the way my own ignorance or idolatry harmed myself. How do you come out of this holiday, having gone to those places where you accept both the harm that you have done and the harm that has been done to you, wittingly or unwittingly? How do you come out of this holiday?
I'm glad you asked that question. Funny you should ask that question. Because from a perspective of Jewish tradition, it's built into the calendar. We come out of Yom Kippur. Well, first of all, we're in community when we come out of Yom Kippur. If we
out of fasting.
Out of fasting. We come out of fasting together in some way. And we, but a few days later, we have yet another holiday, which is Sukkot. And Sukkot is a harvest holiday. I'm not going to, I won't, I know we're limited on time. And I won't go into it a lot, but I want to say about it.
Yes, go ahead.
What I want to say about it is that Sukkot is a harvest holiday. Sukkot is a time for noticing both the fragility and the abundance of the world around us and being grateful for that. And we sit outside and eat in these, you know, kind of in these structures that are not completely closed. I got to do this in California for a long time, where actually most of the time you can do that. The holiday made a lot more sense.
It depends on how late the holiday comes here.
The holiday made a lot more sense when I was in California yep. than I think it makes here, where, you know, in this region of the country where I grew up and where I'm now living. Yep. But I will do it anyway. I'll do some version mm-hmm. of it anyway. And there's then a holiday that celebrates wisdom, that celebrates Torah. Simchas Torah, the joy of Torah.
Yes.
You know, so... And so if you're thinking about that from a secular point of view, you can think of it as reconnecting with the earth, reconnecting with what sustains us.
With food and shelter.
With food and shelter, with other people. With, yes. with other people.
We
and,
don't have food or shelter without other people. We're social beings.
Absolutely. And then with wisdom also.
Yeah.
Some, you know, with connecting with the wisdom of people before us and people who've come after us and people who are in front of us now and whatever your sources of that are, you know, again, we're back to what we talked about in the first segment of that, you know, that intersection of the physical, emotional, and spiritual and intellectual, and that way that, so how do we come out of this? Well, we come out of it by just living our lives. That's how we
right.
come out of it.
Right.
We come out of it by living our lives and by doing that as attentively as we can.
Right, right, and there's a play on the word atonement, which is it's at one-ment.
Right. Yeah.
And when you are at one, you are graceful. Mm-hmm. So all of the clunkiness that preceded this time, this existential time, has been rewoven or reworked together, so the parts work well together, and
exactly.
you can move gracefully.
That's
again.
The idea. It's yeah. like when you have a good cry and then you feel better.
Yep.
It's like a version of that.
Yep. Rabbi Shifra, what should we close today with?
Oh, I'm not sure if it fits with the energy of this or not, but the what I sent you of We Rise mm-hmm. could be nice.
Would you like to say something about that piece before I play it?
Yeah, I think that Batya Levine, who wrote that, wrote it maybe it's about 4 or 5 years ago. It's not real long ago. And I believe it was in response to one of the times when our attention was being drawn to to violence and structural racism, and I think it was it might have been after what happened in Charlottesville. I don't remember exactly. It was in one of those moments where a lot of attention was getting drawn to that, and she wrote this piece, We Rise, that's about taking collective action from a humble and loving place. And it's a very energetic song.
Thank you. In hope,
in prayer, we find ourselves here, she says.
Right. Let's listen to that, and I have one closing question.
Okay.
We rise, humbly hearted, rise, won't be divided, rise, with spirit to guide us, rise. In hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In hope, in prayer, we're right here. In hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In hope, in prayer. Children rise, elders with wisdom rise, ancestors surround us rise. In hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In a hope, in prayer, we're right here. In a hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In hope, in prayer, we're right here. And we rise up from the wreckage.
In a service to those who are not Jewish, but who have Jewish friends, what is a good greeting at Rosh Hashanah?
Shana or a good
Shana Tova.
Have a good year, to a good year.
To a good year. And then also may it be a sweet new year.
Shana Tova, Mituka. Mituka is sweet.
And with Yom Kippur, there is a greeting.
Or may you be sealed in the book for good.
Yes.
Gemar Chatima Tova. May you be written in the book of life for good.
Or sealed in the book of goodness.
Sealed in the book of goodness.
And that's may you live the next year.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, thank you. This has been great.